everyone, and welcome. I'm Megan Kellett, an editor for SearchVirtualStorage.com. I'm here today with Mike Laverick. Mike is a VMware expert and runs the RTFM education blog, and we're here to talk about using iSCSI for a virtual server environment. Hi, Mike, and thanks for being here with me today.
Thank you very much for having me on the call.
You're welcome. So, Mike, my first question is, what are some of the advantages of using iSCSI for virtual server environments?
I think the big advantages is that it should be, theoretically, much simpler because in comparison to, say, fiber channel, there are no WWNs, zoning, special fiber channel switches that need to be acquired. There's no complicated masking that needs to be done to present the storage. And what it means for people using virtual server environments is that they will get all the benefits of perhaps the vendor's file system, so for example, VMware VFS, without the hassles associated with the setting up fiber. And I think the other big advantage is because iSCSI works both at the hypervisor level and in the guest operating system, the scope for using an iSCSI initiator actually inside a virtual machine, where you might actually find you get better performance for raw I/O to the LERN. But more importantly, you might be able to break through some of the limits that are currently around, say, VMware's hypervisor, where the maximum-sized RDM or the maximum-sized virtual disk is still just 2 terabytes. If you, for example, run the iSCSI initiator inside a Windows VM, then the rules that govern the size of the partition are Microsoft's GPT tables, which means you can go way beyond the kind of 2 terabyte limit that a lot of people are restricted by. And I guess the last big advantage is people tend to run their hypervisors in clusters, and they tend to keep one cluster separate from another just for security reasons and for simplicity. But there's often files that you want to share between clusters, such as ISOs and templates. And with iSCSI just being IP, it's much easier to sort of selectively present ancillary LUNs that maybe hold ISO and templates to a whole range of clusters without necessarily being deprecated.
Okay, and on the other side of that, what are some of the disadvantages of using iSCSI?
Well, I think we have to remember that it's still IP. It's still Ethernet-based. It's still TCP packets that are going across the wire. So in my experience, the problems you tend to have are IP-related. I mean, from something that shouldn't happen, but it sometimes does, things like IP conflicts, to just bad addressing, so people put the wrong subnet mask in, or they are going across a router, which may not actually be a very good idea for iSCSI configuration, but for whatever reason they have to, and they've got the wrong default gateway entry. I think the other thing is that most customers use the software-based iSCSI stacks that exist either in VMware ESX, Citrix Xen, or in Hyper-V. And the problem with that is it's in software. So if you end up wiping that server and rebuilding it, you have to put all that configuration back again. Now, in fairness, what customers could do is use an iSCSI HPA from the likes of Cisco, but they aren't cheap. And so very often people are using a software-based initiator, and that can provide some hassles when you come to, you know, rebuild an environment. But very often people look down on doing in-place upgrades and say, let's just wipe the system and rebuild. When you do that, you have to put all your storage configuration back into the hypervisor to make it work. Whereas if you're dealing with something like Fibre Channel, to be fair, the Fibre Channel environment kind of exists externally from the stack of the hypervisor. So you can wipe the system, put a new version on, and the LUNs will still appear. So I often get asked by customers, should it be Fibre Channel, iSCSI, or NFS? And I often sit there and list all the advantages and disadvantages of all three. But I often feel like there isn't one that really is a clear lead in every single case. And the final thing I would say is you can get some weirdness going on with iSCSI when you do rescans. So, for example, let's say you take a LUN away from a server and do a rescan. I've often found that LUN is still there despite the fact that the server shouldn't have any rights or privileges to it. And it's because the way that TCP sessions are kept open to improve performance and often shared for multiple channels to different LUNs, it's actually quite a difficult thing to cleanly de-present a LUN. So you can have oddness where the LUN, you know, the server doesn't have access to it, but it thinks it does. And then it eventually gets cleared about an hour or 2 hours later as the TCP session is brought down or reestablished or something like that.
Okay, now what steps do you have to take to implement an iSCSI in a virtual environment?
Well, I think the implementation of iSCSI should be relatively straightforward because you should already have the pieces in place, the Ethernet network, to actually allow the connectivity to take place. But to get into a bit more detail, obviously, I think most customers want to VLAN off their iSCSI comms into a separate VLAN or even a separate physical switch if they can afford that. People have to remember that the iSCSI TCP port, 3260, no iSCSI communication is encrypted. There's no security around iSCSI from a kind of lifting data off the wire. So you have to be pretty careful about making sure that nobody can tap into that side of the network and literally just do a packet capture of your data. The other nice to have is 10 gig throughout from the hypervisor up to the storage. Yes, you can get away with 1 gig interfaces, and of course you can do multipathing I/O with bundled 1 gig interfaces. But there's a level of complexity there which is perhaps a little bit undesirable. So for a customer who was coming in new to iSCSI, and maybe that was part of a new push out for a new virtual platform, it's an ideal time to say, well, is it time to move from 1 gig to 10 gig rather than doing that midway through the lifetime of that commitment? And I guess the last thing about implementing iSCSI is it does have its own naming convention, something called the IQN, the iSCSI qualified name. So I think most companies would have to sit down and just very briefly think about, well, what we're going to use as our IQN, what standard are we going to use for that? And there are some conventions around the IQN that you can follow, but there'll also be parts of it that you might want to make unique to your business. And the reason that's important is all security, kind of server CLN or not CLN, is done through the IQN in most cases. So if you establish a poor convention, it's quite difficult or a pain in the butt to have to go back and re-establish and standardize on that IQN. And going back to the disadvantages of iSCSI, whenever I've had a problem in my own lab environment with setting up iSCSI, it's because I've FUBAR'd an entry on the IQN. I've typed it incorrectly. So it's a fat finger syndrome, I think, seems to apply more with IP storage, iSCSI and NFS, than it does perhaps with fiber channel.
Okay, now building off of that, how do you configure iSCSI in vSphere? Can you explain those steps?
Well, in a nutshell, the first thing you really need to do is make sure that you've got a virtual switch with at least two network cards backing that virtual switch with what's called a VM kernel port group, literally an IP address, that will allow the ESX host to speak to the iSCSI system. And in ESX4, a new configuration was introduced to allow true multipathing to that storage such that you get a load on both network cards or more if you have them. That load balancing is perhaps less important if you're going down the 10 gig route. Your multiple NICs then are just really there for redundancy as opposed to any load balancing, because it's unlikely that you'd saturate even a 10 gig link, never mind a teamed one. And then the next stage would be to enable the iSCSI stack in ESX, which when you click properties and enable it, it'll create an IQN for you, but I think most customers change that to be something that's their standard. And it creates a kind of alias device with the name of VMHBA 34 or 40. It seems to be a bit of a random thing what it does. So it actually looks like a physical iSCSI HBA, but really what's backing it is a VM kernel port with ordinary Ethernet cards behind it. Once it's enabled, there's a little tab where you can type in the IP addresses, if you've got more, of the SCSI target. And I guess the last thing to check is, does the iSCSI system support CHAP authentication and has it been enabled? Now, CHAP is just an authentication protocol that allows you to say, you don't just have to type in the IP address to connect to the iSCSI system, you also need to know the password to connect to that system. Now, in fairness, if you're VLANing stuff off and it's on a private network, most customers come across just don't use CHAP at all. But if you are doing a rescan and you're not getting LUNs back, there's basically three reasons that it could be. Wrong IP address, the comms aren't in place, the wrong IQN, and then the third thing to check is, well, has CHAP been enabled? It depends what your environment's like. If you're in charge of the VMware and the hardware, you're more likely to find that everything fits together. But if you have a separate storage team, separate from the VMware team, there may be a lack of communication about what the appropriate standards are and what's needed to make the thing work. So a lot depends on your environment and how it's being implemented. But I think in a nutshell, that's what we would do in VMware to enable iSCSI. And if you've been doing it for a while, it's less than a couple of minutes per server. And in my own environment, I have all this scripted. So if I build a new server, the script enables the iSCSI stack, and scripts enable the configuration of the network. So going back to that downside of if you wipe a server and rebuild it, you have to put it all back. The answer to that is if you go down the route of scripted installs, is, well, you just rerun your script and everything is rosy in the garden again.
Okay, so Mike, how do you test the performance of an iSCSI storage device? Are there any specific tools you would recommend for this?
Well, I guess there's two sides of that in terms of tools. There will be ones that are vendor-specific, peculiar to your hypervisor vendor, whether that's Citrix or VMware or Microsoft, and then there are more generic ones. From the VMware perspective, tools like ESXTop and VMI SCSI Stats are a good place to look at. In fact, the VMI SCSI Stats is probably better because it actually focuses on a particular VM and what its I/O is. So if you're trying to troubleshoot why does this particular VM seem to have slow access to storage, it's a good one to look at. On a more generic level, there are tools like IOMeter, which allow you to generate and create a fake disk load within a virtual machine. And then you can use that kind of fake load to sort of get a baseline on what you think should be expected. And on a kind of macro level, you know, both Virtual Center and Microsoft's SCVVM have charts that will allow you to show what the kind of I/O is like. But I think you're often better off with command line tools because they will give you a second by second line speed, you know, number of megabits per second that's being read or written out of the system, which can be helpful in troubleshooting. I think what I would say about performance is it's all about expectations, and you should expect the same level of performance of iSCSI as you would get out of Fibre Channel. So don't expect an iSCSI system to be slower than Fibre Channel. I think one of the problems that the industry has generally is this very mistaken notion that Fibre Channel represents the racehorse of storage, and the iSCSI represents the kind of, the next step down, you know, and then somehow NFS represents the donkey of storage. And all of that is garbage. I've got customers who use NFS in their environments, and because it's been spec'd appropriately, it actually outperforms the equivalent Fibre Channel environment. So I think in terms of protocols, FC, iSCSI, NFS, they're only really as good as the hardware that backs them, the number of spindles, the amount of cache you've got. What we're really getting out of these different protocols is different features and different advantages. And really, you've got to look at those advantages and disadvantages as we've been briefly discussing on this call, and then weigh up for you and your business, which is the one that is the best fit. And you might indeed find yourself using a combo of both. You might use a combo of Fibre Channel with NFS. You might use a combo of iSCSI with NFS. It's rare that I see people using Fibre Channel and iSCSI at the same time because they offer very similar features. But people often want a combination of block-based storage, Fibre Channel or iSCSI, and or something that's more kind of NFS and SIS-based, and that's what leads them down the route of sort of NAS-based technologies. So try not to see it as an either-or, that these things represent monolithic things and you can only choose one or another. Most of the array vendors, I've got NetApp, Dell Ecologics, and I've got EMC in my environment, support all three protocols. And so really, it's up to you to look at the features and say, well, is this one the more appropriate one for my particular usage case?
Right, definitely. All right, thanks for all those answers, Mike.
You're welcome.
And for more information on iSCSI for virtual server environments, you can visit searchvirtualstorage.com.